Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Her son was a tapper, and every morning he tapped his pancakes with a fork 3 times before each bite. Never once or twice, never more than 3 times. 3 pancakes, 3 taps. Frequently, he tapped his right index finger on the palm of his left hand and stared at the floor. Always the right finger and the left hand and the rocking. He was a rocker. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. And today I'm talking to Ryan Kennedy about his debut novel, The Blameless. Virginia is a single mother of an autistic child with a disinterested ex-husband and a demeaning, dead-ended job as an adjunct professor on 3 different college campuses. She struggles every day, barely able to get by with no end in sight. Then she learns that the man who murdered her father when she was a little girl has just gotten paroled. Despite his life sentence, Virginia remembers the day her life changed because of Travis Hillier. She decides to confront him. Hi, Ryan. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Galit. Thank you for having me.
So what was your impetus for writing this lovely novel?
Well, there are 2 ways of describing this. One is less interesting, but the first inkling I had of this novel came in the spring of 2015. I'm not sure exactly what inspired it, but I kicked the novel around in my head for a few months before I even began to write. Originally, I had in mind a character who gets out of prison and the son of the man who was murdered as a vengeful character. But the story didn't really start to work for me until I realized that the son was actually the daughter of the man who was murdered. And then I started to understand the story a little bit better. That's one part of the origin story. The other part is I believe this story is rooted in my subconscious mind. My father was killed when I was a boy at 12 years old. And so I really related to the struggle that Virginia goes through. I related to her feelings of loss that she carried with her throughout her life. So I had never tried to write about my father's death directly. I don't know how to write about my father's death directly. It seems like one of those things that's sort of beyond words, beyond language for me. But I was able, in writing this novel, to take the essence of what I experienced and reimagine it through these characters.
Well, I am so sorry for your loss. And that makes the book even more powerful than it was, knowing that you had that personal history. So your character, Virginia, has a PhD, but is barely making a living. She has no office space, quote, no benefits, crushing wages. She owes $80,000 in student loans and works out of the trunk of her Honda. Virginia's in a sad but more and more common position of being stuck as an adjunct, being paid less than a preschool teacher, struggling to raise a child. You also teach at the college level and probably have firsthand understanding.
I do.
Can you say more about that?
Yes, I have taught at the college level for 26 years now, and I have had stretches where I was an adjunct professor. And so I do know how difficult it is to make ends meet, to teach at multiple campuses and try to hammer together enough money to pay your bills. Fortunately, I've also had the good favor of teaching full time. But where I teach in California, 70% of the community college instructors are adjunct instructors. So it's a big problem, and it's a very common problem that a lot of teachers face.
So sad. Virginia's relationship with Timothy, her son's father, her ex-husband, is strained at best. He seems like the epitome of a horrible human being. He only takes his son once a month. What say you?
Yeah, you know, Virginia is recently divorced from this man, and, you know, we really only get her perspective in terms of what went wrong, but she believes that he just couldn't handle being married to her and raising an autistic child, a nonverbal autistic child, which is full of challenges. And we see bits and pieces of their relationship, and he has a very detached sort of character. And one of the things that Virginia really needs in life is intimacy, and she can't seem to find it. She can't find it with her husband. You know, she ends up divorcing him. She struggles to find intimate moments with her son, Timothy, because he's nonverbal. He can't express himself in the ways that most of us do. And so I think that's part of Virginia's inner conflict, is she continually is seeking closeness and intimacy and repeatedly being rebuffed in that.
Yeah. You're right about Virginia's son. Quote, Timothy was not like a son, more like an expensive and complicated house cat, a creature that appeared in doorways and rubbed up against the walls. It's just, that's heartbreaking. Virginia's anguished because she sees no hope for Timothy. Is there any?
Yes. You know, I think part of her journey in this novel is trying to accept her relationship with Timothy as it is. In the beginning of the novel, it's said that she was very much involved in support groups and things like that, but there seemed to be no cure for her son, and nothing really changed much. And, you know, I think in an act of despair, she sort of pulled away from those groups, those support groups. But in doing so, she kind of discovered that she had no friends outside of those groups. And so she spends time in this novel trying to understand who her son is. I'm trying to have moments of connection with him. And on the surface level, it's very frustrating to her at times. But on a deeper level, it's very despairing to her, because she does love her son so much. And she's trying to make a connection that seems impossible to make.
Yeah. Virginia's overwhelmed with disappointment, also about her students who seem to only care about their grades. Are you speaking from experience? And why are they so uniformly terrible?
Yeah, you know, I would hate to say on a live broadcast, how terrible it is to teach. There are actually some very great rewards to teaching. But teaching also is a confrontation with oftentimes students who don't really want to be there. And that makes it difficult. And for Virginia, being that she's been grinding along as a part-time instructor for 10 years, she has become somewhat jaded. And I think we see that in her classroom scene. And that's another part of her difficulty in life, is that her career has stalled. She's not teaching the subject matter that she wants to teach in life. And she doesn't feel like her job matters. She doesn't feel like she's really making a connection with students, that everything just comes down to points and rules and grades and having to repeat herself. And yet the students continue to write dismal essays no matter what she does. So it comes back to this sense that Virginia has that she's very ineffectual in life, in all of her roles and relationships.
Virginia remembers the day her father was killed. Her entire life changed, so she's enraged when she hears that Travis Hilliard is out on parole. Can you address why was it possible for his life sentence to be shortened like that?
Well, he gets a sentence that's 25 years to life, and after 25 years, he starts coming up for parole hearings, and we're told that this wasn't his first parole hearing. But eventually, the parole board granted him parole. And Virginia finds out about this from her mother. And you're right, it is enraging to her. she, this is sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back in her life. It's something that she can't quite handle. And, you know, as the novel progresses, Virginia begins to take stock of all the ways in which her life has fallen short. And more she begins to place that blame on Travis Lee Hilliard, that the murder of her father is sort of the origin for everything that's gone bad in her life. And so the more she begins to think about this, the more she decides that she needs to confront him about his crime.
Yeah. So he goes by his initials, Felty, and he's challenged by the outside world now that he's been paroled after 3 decades at Folsom Prison. And I felt sorry for him. I really was convinced. You wrote him as a convincing, reformed character. But he automatically, almost immediately, runs into serious difficulties on the outside. And I felt sorry for him. Is that how you wanted readers to feel?
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of sympathy for LT myself. And it was an interesting question for me. It is an interesting question for me. How does somebody come out of prison after 30 years and live a regular life? He has no family. He has no friends. He has inherited a mobile home out of the middle of the desert, and his journey takes him there. But he's not quite sure how to function in life. And he really, you know, on a deeper level, doesn't quite know how to take hold of his freedom. He's used to being told what to do and when to do it. He's used to living in a small cell. That has been his whole existence. So when he gets out, he, as you said, early on, he becomes a mark for a prostitute who tries to take advantage of him. He ends up getting into a fight later on with somebody else. He doesn't always make the best choices. He doesn't always read situations correctly. And I think part of that is just his feeling of displacement, being a prisoner back in the world.
Yeah. So as you said, Virginia, it was just the straw in getting out. It was the straw that broke her. But she'd been sinking into this depression. And I wonder if learning about Travis, not just the straw that broke her, but also it gives her something of a purpose.
Yes. I would agree with that. I think it gives her focus. It gives her purpose. In some ways, it helps her to make sense of why her life is the way that it is. Whether or not she's correct about that, she believes that that he is the source of her problems. And so it's her way of perhaps coming to this, probably a false conclusion, that by confronting him, perhaps even killing him, that she will somehow remediate all the problems in her life, that she will answer for all the problems in her life.
I really like that you, the story is told in both of their voices so that we could go back in time and see what Travis's, LT's take on the whole story was. He in a pretty sad life.
Yeah.
Why do you imagine that he was so lacking in ambition, so careless as a young person, about where he lived and what he did?
Yeah, you know, I think it's sort of traced back to his upbringing. His father also was killed in a fight before LT even knew him. His mother was a cocktail waitress at a strip club when he was a kid, and sometimes she took him with her to work, and he had to wait out in the car while she did her shift. He grew up a kind of poor working class kid in you know, tough circumstances, and he grew up to be a working class man, just sort of surviving paycheck to paycheck. And I don't think he had very much foresight in life as a young man, and so through a series of events, he ends up becoming homeless, becoming a drifter. And in doing so, he ends up, drifting into Madera, California, which is in the very center of California, and being taken in by a pastor at a church.
Okay, so that's a question, too. Like, you were talking about how Travis didn't judge situations very well. Virginia's father was a preacher who trusted everyone, and he helped strangers all the time. How did he so misjudge Travis?
Yeah, I think that speaks both to his humanity, on the one hand, that he's willing to trust people, he wants to help the needy, and his naivete, on the other hand, that perhaps he was too trusting with people, and he ended up trusting the wrong person that he brought into his life. And perhaps he felt that he was, because he was doing what he perceived as God's work, that he would be protected from evil. But that's not what happens.
Right. Travis claims to have been converted while in prison with the help of a Black TV preacher doing 6 years for embezzlement. Can you talk about how that would have happened, how, that experience? Don't tell the story because people have to read it.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that? How did you research it? What did you know?
Well, you know, it is ironic that that LT experiences a religious conversion in prison. This is several years into his prison sentence. But I think that he had been exposed to religion while he was at the church, living at the church with the family. But he was something of a fraud. He didn't really believe it. And in prison, he is faced with a level of despair and fear and boredom that he never could have predicted. And that in some senses was very overwhelming to him. And here comes Wayne Scott, this televangelist who's brought in the prison for embezzlement, as you said, who is still strangely this sort of passionate believer who you know preaches out on the prison yard. And LT is convinced that what he's saying is true. And following his conversion, he experiences this very powerful period in his life where he himself becomes kind of a prison evangelist. And then, of course, as Wayne Scott is, you know, transferred out of the prison, LT has to stay there, and his passion wanes over the years, although his belief seems solid.
Mm-hmm. So is he really a different person now that he's converted? He fasts and prays for more quote unction, you call it. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, I get the sense that he is a true believer. I don't think it has to do much with his fasting and his unction. I think that was part of, as he began to feel that that this season in which he felt very spiritual, as this begins to fade, he sort of desperately starts doing things like fasting in order to reclaim this feeling that he feels like is being lost. I think his true belief is more solid than that. I think, you know, he's an older man now after he gets out of prison. And I think that his belief is rooted in real faith, although he does feel somewhat abandoned. He feels somewhat exiled. I mean, he goes from prison out to this house in the desert, and he seems like he's struggling to make a spiritual connection with God. And I think part of this story is about LT recognizing his role in Virginia's life, and how important that is, both for her and for himself.
Yeah. So what about the title? Who is blameless in this story?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it is a question that I think readers have to grapple with, because obviously we're talking about a murderer here who is to blame for what he's done. He's served his sentence. He's on parole. There is discussion between him and Virginia about what that means, whether or not he is now off the hook for what he's done, whether he's been forgiven for what he's done. LT believes that he has been forgiven by God. Even if he has been forgiven by God, it doesn't necessarily make things all right with the victims. It doesn't necessarily make things all right with Virginia. So it does raise this question about what his responsibilities are to the victims of his crime. You know, we all know what it's like to carry the blame for things that we've done wrong. We also know what it's like to carry the blame for things that we probably should never have been blamed for in the first place, particularly those things that happen in our early childhoods. And so I think both Travis and Virginia, I think they're both grappling with issues of blame and guilt and shame and grief and anger in their different ways. Even Virginia sort of carries this irrational blame for her father's death as though she had anything to do with it. But I think that's true to life for many of us. I think that we all wrestle with blame, and I think we all have a desire to be forgiven and to be counted blameless.
That's a really powerful answer, and this is a powerful book that is going to stay on my mind. So I'm so delighted to have been able to talk to you about it. Thank you for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Galit. This has been an honor.
And thank you for joining. Again, this is G.P. Gottlieb, author of the Whipped and Sipped Mystery Series and host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I've been talking to Ryan Kennedy about his debut novel, The Blameless. Hope you all have a lovely book to cuddle up with today and every day. Happy reading.